Hi, I'm Wayne Jones. Welcome to Writing and Editing. This is episode 119, Coding, Happiness, and the Memoir of a Wife's Death. My guest is Rob Broadhead, who has written about the practicalities and pleasures of his coding career, but also about the death of his wife. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for taking the time to come on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you've got a really interesting kind of background, writing wise and otherwise as well. As far as I could find out, you've got at least the three books. So you've got one is about sort of more general in the sense about being a successful and happy IT professional. And another one is about a little more about sort of coding projects and how to make a good coding project. So it's more, I don't know, I want to call it nuts and bolts, but more less macro and more sort of pragmatic, if you want to put it that way. And another one is completely different. It's a memoir about the death of your wife from cancer. And I wanted to start, if you don't mind, to talk about the memoir, because I found it, I did get to read some of it, and I found the tone really interesting and very effective, actually, because it's very matter of fact, and I mean that in a good sense. And in fact, in one point, I think maybe in the foreword or the intro or whatever, you talk about it being a record of events, and I certainly had that feel about it. And it deals with emotion, obviously, but it's definitely not sentimental. And what often comes with sentimentality is overwritten. Things are overwritten and often cliche as well. And I just wanted to know, is that just how you write, or was this an effort on your part to restrain yourself, kind of thing?
It's an interesting question because I guess I'll give you the long answer. Is it? I think it sort of became the way I write. I did go into it trying to keep it because it has such a it's such an emotionally charged topic. I wanted to avoid getting too deep into that, and partially because it would just feel a little bit cliched or something like that, but also because I wanted to get across that you don't have to be buried by emotion, even in an emotional setting. And it's interesting because I've had people that have read it that have talked to me, and they, even as much as I try not to make it too much, I try to keep it sort of positive and for lack of a better term, lighthearted, I guess, so that you can read through it. But I've had more than a couple of people that have read it and said they were just in, in tears at the end and stuff. And even though they, some of them, even though they knew the story and everything else. And I think it's just one of those, it's, I, sometimes there's just things you write about or that you share that it has so much of its own value and emotion that it brings to the table that it, you don't need to add anything to it. It's like if you have a perfect meal, you don't have to add any spices or condiments or anything. You just, and it's trying, it was an attempt to do that. And it was an attempt to not over, to, and part of it's because I didn't want to get myself dragged into it more than I had to. I mean, it's a, it was a, I was part of it and things like that, but I really wanted it to be her story more than my story. And I had to approach it that way. And then I found that that worked for me, that sort of, I don't know if it's lighthearted, but more of a, much more of a pragmatic style, but then just occasionally throw in some humor or something like that has worked really well for me. I think it's probably more my, who I am personally. And so it works very well to come across on the book.
Yeah, I if I were describing it, I wouldn't call it lighthearted. I'm not contradicting you, but it's very pragmatic, I think you said as well. But it's extremely effective because the danger, and I certainly didn't mean to imply that because it's like that it wouldn't draw emotion out of other people. That doesn't surprise me because in a way it can actually help accomplish even more than that because it's not you emoting on the page in your writing, and it gives the opportunity to the reader to do that. You're just being very flat about it, flat in the best sense. So I found it very, very effective. And also I could see, as you're implying, that it would be a writing style that would transfer very well over to other kinds of things that you might write as well. So, mm-hmm. yeah. So,
well, and that's the thing. And by light, and I guess, yeah, it's not lighthearted, but throwing it, you know, there are mixed in with serious things. There's, because life is that way. There's some sort of funny stories and things like that as well. So, I like how you put it. To me, it's almost like when somebody paints a painting and allows they don't have any extra information around it. It's just whoever sees it, they get to emote in the way that they want to emote. And I don't know that I would accuse myself of being that intentional, of being that good a writer, that was part of what I wanted to do. But I do see where that came out and have, you know, sort of embraced it moving forward.
Yeah, no, it really worked. For my next question, I want to ask you something way on the other end. And it's something I've always been intrigued with, and that's coding. And I know -0 about coding. I don't know anything about it, nothing. I know that it exists, and I know that certain people say they do it in order to make software and various other things, but I have no idea what it is or how it's done. And can you just in a general terms, when people talk about writing coding, right? Or doing coding, at least writing coding, mm-hmm. I've heard. Is there a software that's used? And is there one that, for websites these days, almost everyone uses WordPress, for example, or that kind of thing. Is there a standard software for coding? And also, is there any actual writing involved, or is it all sort of more mathematical in a certain way, if you know what I mean?
I do. And there is, I guess for the first question, there's not really a specific tool. It's sort of like writing in general. You can use, there's 1,000 different word processors out there, and you can use things that are very, simple direct writing, where it's not much, it's almost just a step above pencil and paper. But then you can also use stuff that has all kinds of extra flourishes and pictures and images and presentations and stuff like that you can do. And coding's sort of the same way. And when you, there are a lot, like dozens, probably hundreds of different programming languages, and they have varying levels of whether they're very mathematical, almost like writing, A plus B equals C kind of stuff, to things that are built to be much more natural language kind of style. So it'd be things like, pull these data items from that thing, something that is much more human readable. Mm-hmm. And there is it's very mathematical, but there is a little bit of an art to it as well, because you're solving problems and there are different approaches to it. Probably the easiest way to think of it is people that do crosswords and just standard puzzles. You'll find that there are patterns that they will use, whether it like Sudoku, whatever it is, that one. I know that people have all these different little approaches they do, or even people are playing chess. There's these different styles that they use. Programming is sort of the same thing. Is it is part of how you think, and how you solve that problem is how you end up sort of writing the code in that fashion.
So does that imply then that two coders could end up with a more or less identical product, but it could be coded in two different ways? Is that sort of true?
Yeah, and to some extent, yeah. It's the end result could be the same, and there could be very different internal steps that get you there.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for indulging me. It's just a very something so foreign to me that I've heard about people way back when using just sort of text editors to do coding kind of thing. And I thought, how can that happen? But anyway, it's just sort of like if I were to talk about nuclear physics or something, I know nothing about it. And my questions would all be at a grade 2 level. So thanks for indulging me. We'll move on.
Nope, not a problem at all.
You also host a podcast yourself. And as I was checking it out, you've already released an episode today. So you're already one step ahead of me. But it's called Developpreneur. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it for 5 years. Is that right? 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, I think that's about, I had one before that was a parenting podcast that lasted about a year and a half or something, and then switched gears and went more technical with Developpreneur. And yeah, I think I want to say like 2017. So yeah, about 5 years at this point.
And the first thing I wanted to say, I mean, you're a very busy guy. Although this is often typical what you see, the people who are very busy, they take on other things and they can absorb it in. The people who are just doing one thing, oh, they can't imagine taking on anything else. But you're a very busy guy. You've got a consulting firm. You've written books anyway. And and you're doing a podcast. And as I can see, I listened to parts of some of them. The frequency seemed to be maybe 2 a week. Is that about right?
Yes. Or yep.
Yeah, something like that. So that's a lot. And also, I know from my own experience, you can't just sort of turn on your computer and start interviewing someone. You know, there's prep that needs to be done. There's post-production and there's all sorts of things, even though like my own, it's a modest little podcast that I do here, but you can't just, you know, it just doesn't happen. You can't do it in 10 minutes kind of thing. And what I was curious about is your process. And like, do you, how much preparation do you do? I mean that in the sense of, do you prepare a bunch of bulleted notes, or do you kind of write a script for yourself? Or do you just sort of say, oh, I'm interviewing Larry X today, and I know what he deals with, so I'll just kind of, you know, I'll know what to ask him. Like very little preparation in that sense. How do you go about it? And does it depend from guest to guest?
It does depend a little bit. And because I will do interview podcasts, but I'll also do stuff that's just me talking through technical stuff. And I've done it a couple different ways. From the technical stuff, when I'm just talking, I'll usually have an idea, and then it may be something I put some bullet points to make sure that I stay on track and I don't go, you know, off too much into the weeds when I'm going through and actually recording. From the interview point of view, usually I get a couple of key topics, but I like to do it in such a discussion manner that it's just sort of, if the discussion starts to falter or something, then I'll go, oh yeah, I wanted to talk to him about this. But it's amazing how many times, because I always have them give their own introduction. It's basically, I'll just say a very, you know, like a sentence on them and then let them go. It's amazing how many times that introduction has enough information that we talk for an hour after that, that it's all these questions and digging into, oh, how did you do that? Or, oh, that's interesting. What was that like? And that's to me, the best part of this is it is, from a production point of view, it is much more time consuming to do an interview format for me. I can crank out stuff that are technical topics. I can talk because I've done it long enough. It's just second nature, and I can crank through those, and I know how to edit my own stuff fairly quickly. It probably takes twice as long to do and maybe more than that to do an interview, but I get so much out of it. I enjoy it so much that I keep going back to, I'm like, I just want, I love doing these things. So, you know, it's one of those that I stay busy, but it's in a good way. It's stuff I enjoy. So it's busy doing fun stuff.
Right. And when you say you get so much out of it, do you mean that it's sort of like a professional development thing where you're keeping yourself aware of what's going on in your biz kind of thing? Or do you mean more, I don't want to say touchy-feely, in the sense that it's always good to talk about people who know stuff about stuff, like talking to you, for example, me. And is that part of what you mean when you say you get a lot out of it?
Yeah, it's actually, from a professional development, I tend to get more when I'm just sort of lecture. It's almost like a lecture kind of podcast and going through stuff because I'm researching technical stuff. When I'm interviewing, it is, I mean, I learn a lot about business and about how the world works when it's in areas that I don't, you know, necessarily dabble in as much. But also there is that touchy feely thing, is there's like, I've had some just really fun times talking to people. I mean, I've got one that occasionally I pop back up on. I talked to this guy that never would have run into him otherwise. Probably he's basically like a music executive, but they like send bands out and do corporate events and things like that. And at the end of it, he wrote a little, like, which is one of the things they do, is their like shtick basically is they'll go write a little song about somebody in the audience. So he wrote a little 2 or 3 minute song that was just, he asked me a couple of questions at the start, and then just on the fly did this improvisational type song. Mm. And his brother says, like, it's just a cool experience to have something like that happen. And you go, you know, I get done with this stuff, I'm like, I am really glad I spent the time to have that conversation. Yeah. So there is some touchy feely, but there's also just, yeah, I learned from just talking to other people. I don't think I can talk to people and not learn something that I didn't know before. So it's always educational as well.
I've had the same experience, and I can certainly remember interviews where I've just kind of been blown away, and I've had a lot of fun as well with some of the guests, and that you kind of a banter goes back and forth. And yeah, there's ones that really stand out, and it's amazing. There's some people who just, I mean, they not only have a deep knowledge of something, but they're so great at conveying it to listeners who don't have the same kind of expertise. And I've always been very admiring of that, because it's a great skill. Anyone can, like, I could talk, my specialty is 18th century British literature. I could talk in exquisite detail about that, but maybe not enough to hold an audience interest kind of thing. So, yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you is about writing as well. And am I right that there are the three books and there are no other ones, or did I miss something?
Of things that I've completed, there's the three. Yeah. Those are, and it is, I found actually when I was going through before I wrote the first book and working on my master's, there was a lot of writing involved. It was an MBA, but there's just tons of writing, and it was more business writing, but I realized I sort of enjoyed it, which was shocking to me. I'd always been a math guy, and math and sciences, no literature, although I always read. I mean, I'm somebody that from early childhood read a lot. And to me, it was normal, but other people are like, wow, that's not normal for people to be reading, you know, be 8 years old and loving Shakespeare and stuff like that. Mm. So I always liked literature, but just didn't think I did, because I didn't think I enjoyed the writing. But then once I started, I realized, oh, I do enjoy writing. And I like writing. I like mixing it up. I like switching topics and trying my hand in different areas. I haven't even touched like fiction, but nonfiction stuff in different areas, I've enjoyed doing that so far. So we'll see how it goes. If I, you know, and I do have, like, eventually I'll probably get back around to it and say, you know, I haven't written in a while, I want to go put something else out again.
Is fiction tempting in any way?
It is to some extent, but it's one of those, I have a feeling once I got into it, it would suck me in completely. Cause I've read so much fiction that I have a feeling that I don't think I could do like just a short little, and maybe that's the thing, is dip a toe in, is try a short story, but I have a feeling it'd be something that I would just get sucked into that world that I would create and just write and write and write.
Interesting. Yeah. That's curious. Do you find that, and actually I would just want to say before we moved on, that's actually something that a lot of writers don't know, is that reading a lot, I mean, basically what you've done is expose yourself to how writing is done. And a lot of people don't really read enough, you know, kind of thing. So you're sitting down to write a book, but you really don't have a lot of experience with how books are written and, or what it sounds like, what good language sounds like. So that's what you were exposing yourself to, that. Yes, you may not have had aspirations to be a writer, or may not think that you could do it, but if you've read a lot, that's a great preparation for, you know, it's like learning the coding manual kind of thing, if that even applies. Do they have coding manuals these days? I don't know.
They do. They're all online these days. It's like nothing's actually printed, it feels like, but it's out there.
Yeah. The last question I wanted to ask you, and maybe this is unfair, but you do work in IT and you do consulting in that area, right? What do you, this is the, I, and maybe their answer is no comment, or I'm not sure, but what kind of a revolution or change do you see in IT in the next 10 years? Or what do you feel that's happening now that you feel is going to be a big deal in X number of years, 5, 7, 10 years?
It's the biggest thing is it is, I guess, for lack of a better term, evolving. It's, and if you look historically, there are certain things that have followed the same path where you start off very simplistic and very directly hands-on with a technology or with a service or a solution or a product. And then you start to grow into things like automation and ways to think of like automobiles. You know, it started out, it was like everything was handmade, and then they got to the point they finally realized that they could do assembly lines, and then you like you know it sort of grew into this thing so that the people that actually can do the hands-on crafting sort of disappeared because there were other ways to deal with it, there were ways to mass produce it. And software is sort of the same way. I see it going, and it definitely has in the last 5 or 10 years. And you even mentioned, you know, an example of that would be WordPress, is that that's, and there's other things out there that are, it's not really writing software as much anymore as it is configuring it or setting it up for your specific need. And so the actual coding part, there's less people that do that and know how to do it. And now you're seeing more people that are able to think that way and not necessarily have to do the code, but instead are more like, you know, pointing things here, checking this off, setting this up. And it's much more, I guess, almost steering the software than it is creating the software. And that's that market is creating a whole di- it's interesting watching it because you have the people that can do it at the most base level. There's less of them, although there's probably as much needed as there ever were. And so it in that area of the market, it's, yeah, you can almost write your own ticket to some extent if you know how to do it, because there's just not enough people to get it done. And then on the other end, you have this market that is just flooding, which is still a greater need, and it's flooding with all these people that can do that steering and configuring of the software. So it's like a lot of things where it's we're trying to move forward as a, you know, as a society, as people, we're trying to get beyond that need to code and get to the point where the we can sort of just tell a program, you know, say, tell the computer, hey, go do this, go do that. Which you see with, you know, like the voice stuff that we now see that was a few years ago was unheard of. And now there's people talking to their Siris and their Alexas and all of that stuff all over the place. And so we're creating this you know, this level of separation from that core stuff, and then in doing so, making it available to much far more people. So now there's things that, you know, people I see people do stuff with their phones and watches that, yeah, are it's some level of programming skill is involved. You don't think of it that way, but it is that logical method of thought. And it's people just do it. It's just natural to them. I get being an IT guy, my girlfriend picks on me all the time because she can do stuff with her phone and I have no idea how to do it. And she'll say, hey, you know, you can do this. I'm like, oh, really? Cool. That'd be great to do. I just never, you know, never looked into it. But you know, there's the people are far more technical than they think they are these days.
And I just want to use one example, and I'm not sure if this is what you were alluding to, but I've noticed, for example, in for just for podcasting as a thing, where even for even though I'm not Joe Rogan, I still need to do post-production, if you might want to call it. I've got to piece things together and edit sound occasionally. What I've noticed is that there are people who are catering to that. So they want it to be easy for me to do that. So you'll end up with software, sort of like the WordPress example again, although WordPress has gotten super complicated again, sort of gone around the circles again. But where I'm not a sound editor or anything like that. So I don't want a big complicated interface. I just want the basics to be able to snip a piece here and snip a piece there. And I've been able to find software like that. So it's really effective, not only, or really it changes what you might do, but it's super effective for the end user as well.
Yes, it is. And that's, that was the goal, is to get it, because there was always that disconnect from the end user and the programmer. And, you know, it's much more effective to get it closer to the end user so they can do it. But then you have to make sure that you don't basically suck up all their time, making them do a lot of extra work. And you don't want to have to teach them more than you need to for them to do, to accomplish their thing. And audio editing is a perfect example, because there's behind the scenes, I know that there's just so much complicated stuff about different ways that you can set up the sound and amplify it and all of the different stuff. That's just, it's mind boggling to me. And I get it on a theoretical sense, mm-hmm. but to do it would be, you'd have to go to school. You'd have to spend years learning how to do it. And same way, they've got tools where I can just like, I can click on this and they know I want, you know, I need to just select from a menu to do this kind of task, to set up my sound to be this sort of sound. And then I just want to be able to like copy and paste stuff, drag and drop it. And it allows me to do that. And I'm like, hey, done. I will give you money so I now can get my tasks done quickly. And, you know, that's how a lot of this stuff works, is people just see tasks and processes that are being done a lot. And they say, hey, I bet we can find a way to get a computer to do that or automate it or shorten that up. And then boom, you've got a product and you're off and running.
And you've got users who will buy it for sure. Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, Rob, thanks. This has been really fascinating. It's a world that I just kind of, you know, touch on. I know a little bit about. Thanks for enlightening me, and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. This is a great time.
And that's all for this episode. If you'd like to subscribe or contact me or find out more, or if you like what you hear and want to give me a rating on Apple Podcasts, please visit writingediting.ca for all the links. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again on Thursday.